Oh my God. Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay, it is a long way to the top. If you want a Muskie
troll.
If you want a Muskie troll. That's a big shout out to Jay's neighbor, Steve.
Steve Johnson.
Steve Johnson said, "Hey, is Steve an AC/DC fan after last week's intro?" Yeah, why not? Why? Who
I
isn't?
Said, yeah, he is.
If you're a redneck, you like AC/DC. It's just a par for the course, pretty much. So, you know. Hey, had a couple extra minutes. Why not? The ACs and the DCs. Anyway.
Yeah, that was good. I loved it.
We've gotten a ton of emails already about the Muskie Bash 2021 or whatever. 2017, 2020, whatever year it is. I don't even know anymore.
21. It's 21.
It is 2021.
Yep. Pretty sure.
On July 17th, 2021 is the Muskie Shop Bash. Joe Booker, gonna be there. Smitty, gonna be there. Jay, gonna be there. Elmer Jensen, gonna be there. Or he'll be fired because he works there. Fred Palmer.
What about you? What about you?
I'm sort of a flake, Jay.
He's going to be there, folks.
I will
Steve,
be there.
Live in the flesh, you get to meet the voice.
Meet the meat.
Oh, man, it's going to be fun. This is going to be more of a party than it is going to be something stale, seminar. Just seminar. It's not just...
No.
I mean, there'll be some seminars. You know, there'll be some great speakers and doing short seminars on whatever your specific topics may be.
Right.
Muskie related, of course. But there's going to be a lot of other stuff going on.
I've been working on my jokes, though, Jay.
I know. I didn't like any of them.
All right. I got a joke. Let me try this one on you.
Okay.
This is the best Muskie joke. I was going to do a stand-up routine instead of a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a guy walks up to me and says, "Hey, I got a 13-inch grandma." I said, "Why are you not a midget?" Brunching. See, that's the best I got, Jay. It's not very good.
Keep working on a man.
There's not many really good, Muskie jokes. You know? Who knows? So I'll probably stick with a seminar to help you catch more muskies, I think would probably be more appropriate.
No, that would be awesome.
Anyway, so we're going to do that. Yeah, me and Jay have been talking about this get-together is not going to be, rigid, everyone take your seat. You know, none of that crap. Come out, hang out. We're going to talk to you. Joe Booker's going to talk to you. Everybody at the Muskie Shop. We're just going to have a get-together with like-minded individuals.
Yeah, you can talk to anybody, any of the guides, anybody speaking there. You can see their boats, their rigs will be there.
Yep. You want to?
They'll give you a little walkthrough if you're curious about how Steve or how Joe stores his rods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you keep them when you're using them? Where do you, you know, how do you?
What do you do?
Whatever. Yeah. You know, the trolling setups, tackle storage, electronics, all that stuff.
That's probably my favorite thing. That's me and Jay's idea. Thank you very much. I said, where am I going to park my boat? And we were talking about it. I said, well, why don't we just display them and put everything out so people can go, that's what you're doing.
Park that bad boy right next to the stage when you go on.
You can get in my boat. You can check things out. You can look and you can touch. So that'll be sort of neat, you know. Oh, man, there's jokes in there. I'm going to leave them alone.
Is that Bruce barking in the background?
The people can't hear him, but you can. Maybe they can. I don't care. I have a dog. Deal with it. But that'll be
squirrel in the backyard.
There probably is a squirrel, but that'll be part of the Muskie Shop Bash 2021. I'm excited about it. Just to meet a lot of you guys that have been emailing the app for so long and fans of the podcast and everything. So come out. And then the cool thing me and Jay are doing separate from the Muskie Bash is Muskie Retardation 2021, which is on July 18th. We don't have a name for it, so we're just going to go with that. So me and Jay are going to drag a bunch of boats out, and we're going to fish with any podcast people that show up to the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come out to the bash and you're like, I want to fish with you, Steve, I'll be like, cool, let's go tomorrow. And we're going to go. If one dude shows up, guess what? You're on the boat with me all day.
Yeah.
You're like, whatever, I don't care. We want to fish with some podcasterino. So we're going to line that up. That's going on.
There's
going
to be podcast people coming. You know, I didn't even tell you, there's a couple people in today. Mm-hmm. Not the busiest time of the year for in-store traffic at the Muskie Shop in northern Wisconsin, but there was two different guys in today that were their podcast fans, and they were asking about the Summer Bash.
Well,
they're excited about it. They're looking forward to it already. Yeah, I mean, it's
folks,
cool.
There will be two people there at least, we think. So, you know, get there early. We're giving away some free hats, I believe. We're gonna give away
shield rod. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of door prizes. There'll be a raffle later. All you gotta do is sign up for it, and we'll draw names.
You know, there you go. It's like the Scarlet Letter of muskie fishing. So we're drawing names, but we'll have fun with it, guys. It'll be fun. I need to mention. Do you know where you are, Jay? You're in muskie country, baby.
America.
Bunch of people have been playing Muskie Country. If you don't know about it yet, it is the free version in the app, or you can download the full version from the Android or Apple App Store of Muskie Country. Get your game
coolest
on.
Coolest game ever.
Get your game on, gamers. We're going to do some fun updates to it here soon. But
it's just like Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Except it's just a little different.
It was voted Muskie Game of the Year.
By
literally, there's no other Muskie game, so we win by default.
Oh, right. So, got it. Kind of a shoe-in deal there.
Yeah, okay. Let's not denigrate my accomplishments, Jay.
No, it's fun. It's a fun game.
It is the game of the Muskie Game of the Year. Probably next year, too, because no one else has a Muskie game. So. But check it out. That's going on. I'm sort of excited, right, about the shield rod thing. If you guys haven't noticed, I'm a shield rod aficionado. Just, you know, Mr. Shield Rod here. Hello, buy a shield rod. Big time sale started today on Wednesday. Free shipping on shield rod. So if you've been on the fence about a shield rod, right, now is the time to strike. This is the season. What are we going to call it? It's like the preseason opener kind of deal, right?
It's exactly what it is.
So if you want a shield rod, get it now because it's about as cheap as it's ever going to be. Free shipping. So if you just buy a shield rod, it's free shipping. Check it out. But me and Jay have upped the antes. If you've been on the fence about a shield rod, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. Okay.
Icing on the cake deal?
Icing on the cake.
Yep. Lay it on me.
If you can prove you bought a shield rod, right? A, we're going to give you a prize pack from the bait cave, right? So you bought a shield rod and you're going to get like 4 free baits. Check. But someone is going to win. If you buy the shield rod, I don't care. All of you are going to get it. If you let me know you bought a shield rod, right? Screenshot your purchase or whatever. You're going to receive a blessing from Elmer of your shield rod. Me and Jay got really stupid today, and literally, Elmer has blessed shield rods.
Yep, I shot a 5-second video.
It's amazing.
Of a shield rod blessing.
It's real.
Gregorian chant. Yeah, it's real.
Gregorian chanting is included?
Yeah, the whole 9 yards. Think about that.
If you buy this shield rod, you let us know about it. You're going to be the proud owner of exclusive Elmer Jensen blessings. We will send you the video. It is yours to keep.
Yeah.
And it is legit. You think this doesn't exist? Buy a shield rod and find out it is the funniest crap I've ever seen. It's amazing. What are you going to do, Jay? We're just fools nonstop. It's just continual foolery. Continual. We're working on it. I want to hear a guy's opinion on this because I had a guy in the boat that is just hilarious. Fellow West Virginia boy, right? Nathan Isaacs! That's how you say somebody's name in West Virginia, by the way. And so he was on the boat, and he had the idea for the Muskie Olympics.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear what you guys, your thoughts are on the Muskie Olympics.
This is during the summer bash.
Right, during the summer bash. Yep. I'm thinking about, we have like this separate Muskie 360 contest for podcasters to win something ridiculous like... we let you run around the store for 8 seconds and whatever you can grab in your arms, you keep. I don't know. I'm sure that they won't go for that, but you know, something ridiculous, of like, you know, what do you say? Like the 24 volt carry, right? Like a relay race of carrying batteries, the split ring change, right? You know, a few different events, casting. So what are your ideas? What do you guys think are the quintessential Muskie Olympic sports? Cool. If you want to win a junior's inlines, come in with like your best idea for a Muskie Olympic sport. I want to know what it is. We might have the Muskie Olympics, barring that it doesn't get too ridiculous. And
yeah, this would be another first. I think it's a great idea.
I think it's goofier than heck.
It'd be fun.
You know, whatever. It could be like the shield rod pole vault. I don't know. You know what? Shield rod jousting. That's probably get us sued. What if you just took a bulldog by the tail and you swung it around like you know, like the hammer throw? It's like the pounder throw. How far can you get it? You know, whatever. Guys, come up with Muskie Olympic events. I want to know what you have for Muskie Olympics. I'll send you a junior's in line. Jay, we have had so many questions. It's, you know, it's nearly season opener for you Northerners. We're getting real, real close. We're already catching fish down here in the South.
Right.
And people are always asking similar questions or general questions about what to do, what not to do. So what I wanted to cover real quick and just sort of go through are common musky mistakes, right? As a guide, as a full-time guide, I see every skill level from people that they've never really musky fished to guys that have done it for 40 years.
Right? Okay.
When you're out there and you do it every day, you see all of these things. You see the common mistakes, whether you're a beginner, whether you're a pro, what can people improve on or what are they deficient on? So I just want to go through them and get your comments. We'll sort of go back and forth here on some of them. I jotted a couple things down, folks. It's called preparedness. Okay. I took 37 seconds before we started and sort of went through the basic questions we're always getting.
Sure.
And the four things that I've got here, and I'll start with the first one, bad figure eights.
Okay. I'll stop you right there. I made a list too.
What do you got?
It's going to be very similar to what you have. So please continue. Bad figure eight was on my list too. And me not being a guide, you know, I'm sure I actually asked Al Frost at work, you know, and Al, that's one he commented on too. Yeah. He's been a long time guide. So, you know, he's just like you said, he's seen everything, every skill level, but there's something consistent with client after client.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you guys have to be kind of bite your lip and be overly polite sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you just politely tell someone to do something a certain way and then they repeatedly don't do it that way, they're not learning, right?
Well, it's one of those things.
It's not sinking in, or is it?
It's bad habits.
Mm-hmm. Which are hard to break.
And that's what I want to focus on, which are things that I think that are habitually bad.
Right.
Okay. Bad figure eights. You want to see a perfectly executed figure eight, pull up a Joe Booker video and be done with it. Right?
Sure.
He does it every time. He does it correctly. One thing I'm going to say is this. I see guys that are serious musky anglers. To whatever degree that might be, they consider themselves serious musky anglers, right?
Mm-hmm.
That don't habitually figure eight. Lazy Jays. Maybe, and sometimes pulling the lure out of the water boat side. I don't care if you're fishing in a kid's pool, right? And it's 6 inches deep, and there's no way there could be a fish there, figure eight every time. I can't tell you the amount of fish that I catch that I never see coming in, or that extension of a complete figure eight, at least one revolution, if not more, mm-hmm. allows me to identify that there's a fish there deep. And when musky fishing boils down to most days to a one cast that matters, right?
Mm-hmm,
think of how many days would go differently had you had figure eighted appropriately every cast.
Yeah. And like the old adage, you know, it's just like, okay, I'm on the water 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You get tired and you get lazy. And if it's not second nature to you
yep.
to be doing that, whether it's clear water, like you said, anything. You're in a swimming yeah. pool, you can see, you know, you clear water, you're like, oh, there ain't nothing there.
Right.
There might be one mm-hmm. 5 feet under it charging that you don't see until the last
yes,
minute.
Sir. I've seen them come in that they've just, the in water so shallow that you should have seen them, and they mm-hmm. manifest. It's like they just sort of like a freaking Klingon bird of prey, Jay, because we're both Star Trek nerds.
Mm-hmm.
They just sort of uncloak, and you go, how did I not see that fish?
Right.
It's their job to go unseen. And if you're on the fence, and I'll say this, most people listen to the podcast again. There's not guys that still are not committed to that. There are people that are still not fully committed.
Yeah.
That it is part of the routine, and it's not a bash. It is just I'm trying to help as much as I can every cast, because musky fishing boils down to one cast. I tell my clients all the time, I used to think I could fool these fish and really trick them into doing what I'm doing. My game now is I'm doing all the right things all the time. So when they're ready, I'm prepared. That's how I approach musky fishing. My mechanics are sound every cast, so there's no surprises. If there's no surprises, then it becomes execution, right? Commit to that. Force yourself. Every time that bait's coming in, self-correct, right? And this is the thing about these common mistakes. People are very bad about self-correction. That's it. That's why, you know, structure of our society indicates that. That's why most people have a supervisor. Self-correction and self-introspection is not something most of us are good at. If you want to catch muskies, you have to self-correct. Right? I find as a guide that it's very hard for me to break bad habits. I see people that have 30-year-old habits. I go, I can't fix that in 8 to 10 hours. Right? I can bark and figure eight, every cast, figure eight, mm-hmm. do it, figure eight. There are still people that, and you know, if you're listening, you're one of them, you still don't do it every time as diligent as you should. Self-correct every time you're in the water. Make sure the next time you're in the water, you're telling yourself, every cast, I'm going to self-correct. You can break that habit and become mechanical. When it becomes mechanical and it's every time that is happening, you're going to catch more fish, period. It's
you know, it's another thing.
Mm.
I think some people, when they're tired, they got a backache.
Yep, get lazy.
This, that, the other thing. And if it's not comfortable after a while, figure eighting every time, you know what? You probably don't have a long enough rod.
Well, and that is where I was going
to
go.
It boils down to an equipment choice.
Right. Is, you know,
it's less wear and tear on your body.
The days of 7.6s were painful.
Mm-hmm.
When you're taller and you're doing this slight bend or a full bend every time, every 35 seconds.
I know.
Miserable.
Yep. And that's how it used to be.
Yep. You know, if you're 6 feet or above, you're 5'11 or above, get a 9'6". If you're shorter than that, get a 9 foot. It takes away that small bend in your back, in your lower back, that you're doing mm-hmm. all day. With my 9'6 from the nose of the boat, I can figure eight really well flat-footed without any bend or any motion. It saves me so much wear and tear throughout the course of the day. You know, I'm fishing all week long, all month long, every day. You know, I don't take a break, and I don't have that lower back pain because my mechanical, I'm not paying attention. I'm going through the motions, figure eights, right? I'm not hunkered down. freaking out because I know there's a fish there, are pretty dang good. And mechanical figure eights will catch you a lot of fish and mm-hmm. show you a lot of fish. And, well, and
yeah, you probably, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the days of 8.6s are over. If you're on a boat, get rid of an 8.6. Right. Well,
but like you said, if you're under 5'10", 5'8", 8.6 is a great choice. You know, it's about posture too. I mean, you can't have a 9.6 rod if you're, you know, in that height range. I think it would be more comfortable. I wouldn't say they're over, but it's for, you know, specific anglers.
Right.
Body just, types.
Right. Have an appropriate rod. You know, we've started the podcast. We were debating that. I am a convert, incredibly converted to 9 foot and up. Mm-hmm. Especially being on the taller side of things, that 9.6 is just magical for me. You know, have a rod that is size appropriate, that it's taking the physicality out of it, but get serious about figure eights. I cannot tell you how many people, because, you know, when you're talking to somebody, everybody's caught a 50 and everybody's an amazing fisherman. They all are. Nobody's going to look you in the face and go, I suck. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, part of this podcast, what we talk about all the time, we pick on ourselves and we're pretty much straightforward about it. You know, I'm never going to say that to somebody, but like sometimes you have to look at yourself and go, what do I suck at? I do it all the time. I review videotape footage of myself fishing all the time and go, that's crap. You know, you have no speed control. My depth control is bad. Self-analyze. If you want to be good at this, be introspective. Right? Be willing to correct yourself. Be introspective and go, where am I weak? The other thing, Jay, on my list, I'll give you a shot here in a second, but the other one I got to get to is bad casts.
Okay.
And this is sort of a wider
Meaning inaccurate?
Yes.
Like, you know, you can physically see the edge of a, you know, a weed bed and you're fishing perpendicular or whatever. And you're missing it.
Not so much that. I'll tell you where I'm going, right? It is the inability to read a spot, whether it be new water or familiar water, right? And by read a spot, I mean, let's say it's a piece of timber and the cast is not the premium cast, right? If you're a fan of Crankbait Secrets, you know what I'm talking about, where it's the inside, like the little V inside of a tree or on the long side, the edges. You'll see these casts that are weak, right? Or we're fishing rocks or we're fishing weeds and the casts are just inaccurate and they're nowhere near what you would visually see as a sweet spot, whether you're in the front of the boat, the back of the boat, regardless of position, right?
Yeah.
Reading the cover, understanding the structure and making situationally appropriate casts. That is a thing that I notice all the time. Okay, so let's say we come up to a rock structure, right? And not for fear of dinging the bait, the casts are just not landing close enough, right?
They're not reaching the target.
They're not reaching the target. And you watch it and you see it and you go, are they holding back? Is it a matter of getting snagged? Is it a lack of accuracy? Or is it just situational awareness?
They might, if you got clients in the boat when you're guiding, they might be a little bit self-conscious that they don't want to blow a spot by getting snagged.
And which is, and on my boat, everybody that's been with me knows I snag more than anybody else. Don't care.
Okay.
I don't care. If you're not getting snagged, you're not fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So we get that out of the way real quick. You know, it's not about blowing a spot. There's ways to not, I'll tell you a little ninja trick. If the dude in the front of the boat gets snagged or something like that, hold the line up and fish the spot out before you go in and get it. It's simple as
that.
There
you go. Yeah,
it's sort of like you pay the price, right? All right, dude, you're going to have to hold that for about 4 or 5 minutes till we cast this. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it. I've done it on Booker's boat where he's like, hold on. You know, and before you go to the next little area on that spot, you go in and get it. But reading the spot, seeing the cover and the structure in a way that is productive. So if I'm seeing a lay down, or I'm seeing a rock pile, or I'm looking at a bar, or I'm conceptualizing, and that's probably the dangerous terminology in this thought process, the lack of conceptualization of what these spots are like, right? I try to convey to my clients when we pull up to a spot, I'll say, this is this, and this is what we're throwing out, so they have an idea of what we're going at, right? You know, I often say to them, we're not throwing out anything. We're not throwing out to the nothing. Here's what's in front of you. There's a brake line. There's this. There's this. There's a point. There's weeds, right? So they can conceptualize what they're looking at. But when we're looking at a weed edge or definitive shoreline cover or structure, you know, the lack of situational or spatial awareness becomes apparent in a lot of cases, where they just don't grasp that the fish are going to be cover tight, or they're going to be bottom tight, right? I don't have a magic bullet on how to solve that other than research, reading, and really studying up, like, again, a Booker video, a Chaz Martin video, a Doug Wagner video, Burning Eights. Look at where their casts are landing, right? It does parlay into casting accuracy. It does parlay into, if I need to get near that rock, I need to be able to lay that bait 6 inches off of it every time, right?
Yeah.
But having a read on spots, that's one thing I notice, is people just do not translate what that cover and structure looks like. That will prevent fouling in weeds. That'll prevent fouling crankbaits. You know, working a glider is a big thing. If you're working a tapering shoreline, you know, you should have a concept of, hey, you know, you're looking at 0 feet of water on this shoreline. We're setting in 15, and it is a tapering break, right? It's a gradual break line. It's a gradual contour, right? That will allow you to work your bait commensurate to that structure, how the bottom of that basin is formed. And you've got to think ahead, right? If I'm fishing that break line, I might need to move quicker in the first 5 feet. If I'm looking at 0 feet and I'm setting in 15, what is that going to look like subsurface? Conceptualize cover and structure. It will make you a more effective, more efficient caster. Jay, what's something on your list we can hit?
It's pretty basic, but bad hooks.
Yeah.
A lot of times guys will come in with the rod and reel combo for whatever reason, you know, get re-spooled or whatever. And you kind of see what they're operating with, you know, cause right. You know, it might be a guy, and maybe I'll connect this with a bad leader too. Let's say bad leaders.
Bad terminal tackle.
Yeah. Right. I've seen this a million times. You know, you spend all this money on a nice rod and reel, and God knows how much you got into your boat and all this, that, and the other thing, and your vacation, you know.
Right.
And you've got I won't say a brand name, but you've got one of those 50-cent, you know, kind of bulk leaders on there that's basically a heavy bass leader.
Right.
That ain't going to cut it.
No.
That thing's going to come apart.
Cost you a fish.
Maybe
or
not
cost
on the first fish, but it's going to cost you a lure and possibly, well, it'll cost you a fish at some point. Guaranteed. They're junk. They're too light.
Yeah.
Obviously, make sure your terminal tackle, your leader and snap are in good condition. If the snap is discolored at all,
get rid of it.
You can put a new one on there, or just swap out leaders if you're in the boat. Just tie on a new leader. It's not worth it. Discolored snaps are worn. You've opened and closed that too many times.
Fatigue.
You're a bait freak. You're changing baits way too much. And as for the bad hook thing, not all baits come with the perfect hooks. You know, some are a little on the light side, and they've got also, crane baits are a great example of that.
Underhooked.
Great bait, you know, but they've got very light split rings, and they've got thin wire hooks for a reason. Right. You know,
Bill Crane loves dinks.
It's a light balsa wood bait, and heavy terminal tackle on that bait is going to affect the action a little bit. So you want to stay light, but, I guess one thing you could do is, make sure your drag's bagged off a little bit when you set the hook on that thing, but maybe just swap out the split rings. It's not going to add any weight.
No.
You don't want a number three bass split ring on there opening up on you when you set the hook.
No. And, I mean, crane baits can handle some fish, but that's the thing is
yeah,
they were not designed for Mondo Hondo muskies.
No, you know, probably,
Bill
yeah, Crane's
a, not. Bill Crane is a West Virginia creeker, always has been, always will be.
Creeker?
Creeker. Yes, sir. You learned something today. Oh.
I just did.
Fishing them creeks. You're a creeker.
Cool.
And it's one of those things of, you know, I was just hanging out with some West Virginia boys on the boat, and we're talking about back in the day, the biggest muskie you're going to run into might be 44, and that might as well be a 65 in some of those bodies of water. You know what I'm saying? It's just like commensurate in relationship to where you're at. Little trick I do on the crane baits, I will take those split rings and the hooks off, and I will run the KVD triple aughts or the three aughts on it, which is a light gauge, heavy duty hook. You know, you can beef those baits up. But like you said, terminal tackle, it's like I've paid to go on vacation to go musky fishing, right? And I've spent thousands of dollars to get here, and I've got an $800 rod and a $400 reel and a 50-cent leader.
Think about that.
There is a reason, right? There is a stone cold reason why musky guys do not want you bringing your stuff on the boat 99% of the time. Right? I don't want a client's rod and reel on the boat. The reason being is because of maintenance. It will be bad drag plates, right? Eel set, inappropriately set drag. I have seen, when we come to terminal tackle, I've seen reels that are not spooled correctly, and we've got a fish on, and the spool's spinning because there's no backing on the thing.
That's bad.
It happens.
Do you see more problems with clients? Well, you just said, I guess, you just answered that you really, here, use mine, you know, instead of whatever they might have brought. But did they... Or in the past, maybe, do they have their drag set too light too often?
Yes.
Or clamped down so that there is no drag?
Drags are always too soft.
One thing
people will notice, if you pick up one of my rods, they'll go, man, that drag is cranked down. And again, you've heard me say it on the podcast before, I check my drag at the rod tip. I don't check it at the reel face. Why am I checking my drag where a fish will never pull from? The fish pull from the rod tip, not the reel face. And that is a big difference. So if you check my rods at the reel, they're going to be super tight. If you check it at the tip of the rod, you can pull some, right?
Sure.
And it's a matter of just setting your drags appropriately. So I try to make sure when I put a rod in a client's hand, I go, the reel's set up, it's ready to go. I ask them, hey, let's not adjust this drag because it's appropriately set. And 99% of the time, I go, that's way too tight. And they go, no, that's right. And, you know, it's one of those things of, and I'll tell you, and in all honesty, the first thing I ever did when I got on Joe Booker's boat, right, was I felt his drag.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing I did. It was burning in my brain. I got to know what
the first time you fished with Joe.
First time.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. How does this guy run this?
How does he run that? He's got to clamp down. Right.
He's got to clamp down using super line.
Right.
Near zero stretch.
Right. Is it tight? Am I stupid? You know, it's one of those things. And again, you hear us talk about feel. Feel you can't teach, unfortunately. Right. You come to the Muskie Shop Bash on the 17th, I'll have my drag set and you can pull on my rod all you want. Everyone that comes to the Muskie Shop Bass can take a turn and pull on my rod.
Well, that's something to look forward to right there, Steve. I think you nailed it.
Thank you. Jay, you're the best straight man in all of podcasts. Thank you so much. Sure. Best caller commentary in the game.
He's not the best caller commentary in the business for nothing, folks.
For nothing. But anyway.
Remember that for Major League?
Oh, that's amazing. But you can
take turns,
bring the whole family to pull on Steve Paul's rod.
Bring the kids.
Hop in the boat. Pull on his drag.
Pull
on my drag. But you can see what I'm talking about is how it's set. Like I said, I checked out Joe's reels and went, okay, this is, I'm not crazy. everybody has their own methodology, but that's one thing is when we talk about the reels are appropriately set. Yeah. Man, you get into the terminal tackle talk. Let's just talk signal chain. I call it signal chain from the backing to where I'm tying a knot. Line inspection, eyelet inspection, right? Making sure your reel seat is tightened down. These are things mm-hmm. that cost people fish. I see it. I hear about it. Oh, me and Lloyd were on Lake of the Woods, and his reel seat popped off of the reel fell
either
off.
Either the reel seat or the side plates.
I hear it all
check
the time.
Check those thumb screws. Oh, my gosh. You wouldn't believe how many people come in with...
blown out.
Hey, do you have screws for an Abu Garcia blah, blah, blah right. reel? Because, you know, the whole side plate fell off.
Right. Preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
Preparedness. If anything I can tell you about, like, what we're trying to hammer on and answer as many questions at one time as good as preparedness. Forethought. You know, you go to your local Walmart and tell me many people are self-correcting or many people have forethought. They don't. We live in a sea of morons, right? You know, most people are sitting here ambling through life going, what's on TV? So, you know, the rest of us are trying to catch muskies here and you got to plan ahead. Think ahead. Go through your equipment, go through that signal chain. So is your backing right? Is your line set on there appropriately? Make sure the rod's in good condition. Now the eyelets are in disrepair. Make sure the reel seat's appropriate. Then we get down to knots, right? Everybody's got their own knot that you trust. Make sure you can tie it. Then we're going, like you said, to the leader thing. I do not trust swivels at all. Joe doesn't either. Booker fishes the no BS system, and the reason he does that is because he's had swivel failure on the biggest fish he's ever had on. So
your solid ring to split ring for yep. your leaders?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm minimizing points of failure, right? The way I catch muskies is minimizing points of failure, period. Meaning my figure eight always happened and it's always as good as it can be, minimizing a point of failure. My rod, my reel, my leader, my snaps, my baits are in great condition to minimize points of failure. Mm-hmm. Again, the way I catch fish, the way I consistently catch fish is by having great execution all day, every day. So when they're ready to play ball, I am ready. That is the best way I know to catch muskies is everything is clicking on all cylinders all the time. So that when one shows up and he's ready to go, you're not caught with your pants down. I see this all the time, and I'm going to go back to the figure eight thing, is crappy figure eights when there's not a fish there, and crappier ones when there is a fish there. Bad lazy.
Reminds me of the story, you probably don't want me repeating this, but I think 2 days ago you said, you know, you had a long day on the water, saw some fish, and out of nowhere on the figure eight, what came up after your lure?
Oh, don't even go there.
It was a big fish, folks. Big fish. It was over 50, yeah. And he bit the tail off of your lure.
Yeah.
And it was that close, and it was on the figure eight. It was after good execution. I mean, I'm not trying to make you feel bad. No, sounds it was like. You did everything right. He committed out of nowhere at the last second, and it was an inch away, you know?
Never saw it. I'll tell you, it was... It
never
was,
saw it.
It
oh,
was,
wow.
I'll give you this, and it, and I was, you know, 10 feet from glory, but, you know, I went into the eight and never saw this fish, came around... Went on the outside turn, and this thing just puts its mouth on the tail of my bait. Nowhere near
hook. That's
so
cool, though.
And we're sort of dancing. I could feel the fish. I can see it clearly in its mouth, and I got broadside. And you go, had I done a lazy J, I never would have seen it, right?
Mm-hmm,
I didn't get it, but it was in a mechanical motion, you know? I mean, I know where it's at, and I'm going to get it. Next week, you'll be hearing about that fish in the net. But it's one of those things of good, good mechanics lead to contacts, right? The other thing I'll say is this, and I'm just trying to give you the best I can here, folks. Bad bait selection, right? I thought about
this. Bad bait selection.
I thought about this all day on the boat.
Yeah.
I was texting you and you know, thinking about podcast. Because all I think about is a podcast, Jay. That's it. 24/7.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Is bad bait selection. Okay? Me and the guru watching a guy throw a pounder in a cold front.
Yeah.
Bad bait selection. Right? You've heard that story.
Mm-hmm.
Is, let's look at our bait classes. So we got rubber, cranks, bucks, dive and rise, top water, right? Glide baits. We're pretty much there, right? So let's say it is a cold front. It is not time for your double tens. Season opener is not time for your double tens, Johnny boy, right? You don't break out the tens and the 12s post spawn. Intelligent bait selection. That's one thing that I see. And what happens to the best of us is, especially with these guys that season openers coming up, right? You've bought a bunch of stuff, or you're gonna buy a bunch of stuff in preparation for season.
Right.
Don't waste half the day throwing it and then wonder why you didn't catch fish. What does this new alpha dog look like in the water? Is not going to really help you post ice out.
Right, right. You're saying opening week of fishing.
Up north, yeah.
Don't waste your time testing baits thinking that, you know, one of these baits is going to work.
Well, it's not even a matter of
testing. Use your head and or recommendations to select baits that are appropriate to the time.
Intelligent selection, because like I said, I'm just trying to give you a point in case where guys will have a bunch of new toys and they want to play with them and they go, why didn't we catch fish?
Sure. Right.
You know? Don't get caught up in the bait freak thing. And, you know, and on occasion, I'll say this. Sometimes shock and awe works. I've caught some freaking negative to neutral fish on big baits just by freaking them out with a big bait. But what I'm saying is a common mistake is poor selection. So people will go from the old trope, which is, well, they're not hitting bucktails, we're throwing topwater, right? And that selection ends there. But I've also seen the flip side of the coin. And this is probably one of the more dangerous things for the musky anglers that are in the younger generation. We're all glider freaks. Mm-hmm. And you know who you are. I'm one of them. There are so many guys that are in their 30s that are absolute glide bait freaks. All you want to throw is glide baits. I've fished with you. I'm one of you. You don't
mean... I'm gonna catch a fish on this. I'm gonna make that fish eat this bait.
Bad
attitude.
You're in a rut because you want to throw gliders. You don't. And like I said, it's a lot of us that are in our 30s that you go. I do. I cannot stand a straight retrieve bucktails. Bores me to tears. I want to feel like I'm doing something, right?
Yeah, incorporate JB's and Master Joda's surge technique and mix it up that way, you know.
But you do that stuff, but it's still not the same as the interactive. You know what I'm saying?
True.
But that's what I'm saying is that is a big problem of guys that are actually it's a big problem of guys that are good musky anglers, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Is being glide bait freaks. And being
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's just been committed to like present. And I'm getting this for the guys because you throw gliders so much because everybody else throws topwater and bucktail, and we're missing fish and we're missing active fish because of our inability to do neophyte things or our disinterest. Right? That might not be a super common mistake, but it's just something, the flow of the conversation has brought me to, which I'm notoriously bad about. I'll go 6 hours throwing like esoteric glide baits going, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. I'll catch myself going, crap, dude. You know, because sometimes you are overthinking it, right? But that balance, and that's in that bait thing. What were you going to go for there? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No idea. Understanding weather. I think if you have people had a better understanding, it's remarkable how many people I know that I don't think have a real good concept of weather changes, what they are. You know, people talk about cold fronts.
Right.
You know, that's the only thing they really understand. But, you know, it's just like, okay, high pressure, blah, 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 blah. You know, temperatures drop, high pressure sets in. These are all things that are pretty easily recognizable if you have a basic understanding of that.
Well,
and you can apply it to your lure selection and retrieve.
And that goes with intelligent lure choice. Absolutely.
It does. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm just talking out loud. We need to get a weatherman on the podcast. I can do that. I know a bunch of newscasters.
I took a meteorological course in college.
Well, then you put it together for next week, there, weatherman.
Let me tell you about it too. It was
the worst
experience of my life. It was UW Madison. I had this 90-year-old German professor.
Oh, das good, right? Yes.
Okay, number one, you couldn't hear him. Number two, if you could hear him, you couldn't understand him because of his accent. And number three, it was his last semester teaching. He was retiring. So it's just
care.
Like, that's my college. He didn't care.
I love it.
Anyway, I'm venting already.
You are. You know, goodness.
We're 20 minutes into the pot. No, we're more than that.
Oh, we're more than that. Jay lives in suppressant rage, everybody.
Oh, man.
Listen, we're going to get you. We got a GoFundMe for Jay's therapy over his German meteorological professor.
Yeah, that was a big letdown. But I'm past it.
He's obviously not.
Well, it just reminded me when we were talking about water. I'm like, wait a minute. G101.
That is definitely a consideration, which is understanding weather. I have looked at it, and I've tried to write weather articles in the past and stuff like that. Man, you just go to like Weather Underground or the Weather Channel, and there's so much stuff where like, this are these different systems. And you go, okay. Mm-hmm. I understand post-frontal, pre-frontal, high pressure, barometric pressure changes, things of that nature. You know, and that is helpful because, again, that parlays into intelligent bait selection. It is post-frontal. Yeah. Therefore, right, we're in post-frontal conditions. Therefore, I should put away the 10s and the 12s and the MagDogs.
Probably.
Right? And that becomes a primary consideration also too, like I said, on the tip of things is the glide bait freaks like myself, and that we want to do too much. The pressure is going crazy. We're prefrontal. Maybe I should put on a 6-3-1 reel and reel in double eights.
Like
a Hellcat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So intelligent bait selection. What else, Jay? What did anybody else kick in there at the Muskie Shop with some common mistakes we could sort of harp on and try to help people with?
Well, I was thinking what Al said because I asked him if he had a few little common mistake tips. And
tips.
It mirrored exactly what you said about the drag and the figure eighting.
Yep.
Al said he was talking about poor hook setting. He said the most common thing with clients in his boat of all skill levels
hook sets
is pretty weak hook setting.
I will tell you this. I am, of anything I'm good at, is hook sets. Right? And I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I rock the boat every time.
You bring the pain.
I bring the pain to the point of, and it's again, we talk about feel. Right, you feel it in your rod. I know it sounds stupid. It's going to sound like I'm making crap up. It's almost I told the wife this. Actually, Jay, you'll see the clip. There's a video. We've sort of alluded to there's videos coming out. There's a video, and I've watched the clip a billion times. You never see the strike in the rod. You don't. I just set the hook. It doesn't look like a strike. It just looks like I set the hook. Right.
Oh, you mean visibly there's no jolt.
There's no jolt. I don't get jolted. I cannot remember. I hit them before they finish hitting me.
Yeah, you could tell something picked it up. Might be swimming with it or whatever. You can just tell.
And it's just like even on a fast hit, I've turned them for I don't really have any great stories other than we do need to tell the story about my jigging this week, Jay, which is insane.
The jigging story?
That okay. is the greatest hit I've ever felt in my life, but it was not a muskie, which I'll fill
oh,
you
yeah,
in
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
But as
right.
far as a muskie hit, I don't remember a lot of hits because by the time it's in his mouth and something has changed, I've hit him first. And it's instantaneous. It's not something you can teach, but this is a feel thing, right? Being in tune, I'm very tactile. And everybody that listens to the podcast sort of knows, you know, I play guitar and I'm an idiot. And I did that in a previous life for a living. And being in tune with the equipment, you can feel it in the rod. You can feel the bait. You can feel everything that's going on. You're aware of what's going on. The second you feel something change in there, you light it up, right? And so having a good hook set quick and to the side and up, right, is that sideways sweep. And I often tell clients, a good musky strike, he's going to T-bone the bait, right? That sideways to up sweep will turn that bait and put it in the back corner of that fish's mouth.
Visualize the strike well before you execute one or yes. need to execute one, because there's probably someone in the boat with you, know where your, you know, the boat partner is.
I'm gonna tell you something dangerous. And do not do this, Jay. Tell everybody not to do this.
Please don't do this.
What I'm about to say, do not do this.
I can tell this is gonna be bad already.
Do not do this.
Okay.
I'm on the new Steve Paul rig, right? Which is the party barge. It's a gigantic boat. And this guy, I see the rod move, and then I see the strike. And what I'm getting is this, is you're not really going to see, when you're seeing these videos come out this year, it's rare that you're going to see my rod bend before I'm setting the hook, right? I feel it, and then I'm setting. Before he bends the rod, I'm setting on him. I know he's there. I'm in tune. This guy, I watch the rod bend over, whoop, and then I feel this pap, like a horsefly landed on my pants when his rod tip hit me in the legs.
Mm.
And he went, I didn't get it. And I looked at him and I said, buddy, I said, if you hit that fish half as hard as you hit me, you just tickled him. Right? I took a depth rater and I palmed it in my hand. He was 20 feet away in the back of my boat. And I said, set the hook. I said, if you can put that hook in my hand, right, I'm not going to cry about it. Do not do this. He set the hook as hard as he could, and his drag pulled, and that thing didn't budge in the palm of my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I was white knuckling, thinking I'm about to take 2 freaking 5-aughts in the hand, but I knew I wasn't because I heard he's drag because he'd been back and he's dragged down all day on my reel. And he goes, and you hear the line pull, it buries the line in the rod, and I'm still holding on to a depth rater. That's the same concept, and that comes from one time. This is a story about my dad. Some guys in West Virginia, him and Stan Kukowski, had a guy bet him a bottle of liquor, I believe it was, that they could not put the hook in his hand, right? This old timer's like, you can't put hooks in my hand. I'll sit here and hold this bait. And if you think about when a muskie hits something, its intention is to kill it with the jaw strike, right? Hook, the knives are out. We have plunged daggers into this thing. We have hit it hard. That impact and the bleeding is going to kill this thing, allowing me to turn around in my mouth and eat it with very little minimal risk of choking to death. That sound about right for a predation, right? Mm-hmm. So they're holding that thing pretty tight. You ever have a muskie on a quick strike rig holding onto a sucker? You know they're not mamby-pamby, and they got it in their mouth pretty good. These guys, dad could not set the hook in that guy's hand. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, this is pretty tough line. This is 30-pound mono, right?
Yeah, but still, you're short lining.
You're short lining. You can just couldn't do it.
A few feet away from him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Couldn't put the hook in his hand. You have to hit them hard.
Well, think about, you know, if you just mentioned sucker fishing, it's like how many people have set the hook as hard as they can, sometimes twice, and not move the sucker rig. Well, the muskie's probably got most of that, you know, boiling down to like physics, you know, it's just like there's not much to move. There's not much iron to set. The same thing with, you know, and how similar is, you know, fishing a Medusa or, you know, any big soft plastic lure, you know, they get their teeth in that. It's going to be hard to move the hooks.
You got
to
move the hooks. You got, like when I set the hook on a Medusa or on a Bulldog, I am trying to rip that plastic. Right. And I'm not saying the plastic's not old enough. I am envisioning that they have headshot this bait, right? And that the freaking plastic is inhibiting me from jacking their jaws.
Yeah. Try to break the rod.
Try to break the rod. This parlays back into, because everything's cyclical, everything sort of ties in together. Go back in the time machine and let's go fish 30-pound trilene on 6'6" rods and see hook sets.
Mm-hmm.
That is the advantage of bigger fulcrums. A 9-foot shield rod is a larger fulcrum, which translates more power down our non-stretch rod for hook penetration.
It absolutely does.
Big leverage. Jay, there's a fish. It's in one of the videos we're going to put out of a phantom fish, right? I jacked that freaking head off that fish.
Uh-huh.
I bent 2 barbs on the front hook and got him with the back hook. And you can see where it tore out the side of his mouth. I actually felt bad because I'd hit him so hard that the front hook just bent out and the back hook's what got him. And it just tore through the side. Was that a little bit overkill? Probably. But, you know, I on occasion clients will laugh because I say, I just sent that largemouth to Jesus. Cause if a largemouth is dumb enough to hit my bait, I'm probably going to kill him.
Yeah.
I've caught a lot of dead largemouth, and that not many of them are alive because it's just hit them and don't just hit them hard and don't let off. You know, I don't land them with a crazy amount of power. I'm not let, but also too, that comes from, I know once I've set the hook on a fish, he ain't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a video, winter, spring, summer, fall. You can catch them all with Stephen Paul, right? Was a Booker video. They chopped down the fight on that fish by about 3/4. Right? I just jimmy jacked that fish. And I could have sat down and had a sandwich. You know what I'm saying? I was like, yeah, I know I got him. And I was taking my time because we're actually in a sort of recurrent seam and it's sort of tough to get him in. He kept wanting to go the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But I can put him in a rod holder and sit down and eat a sandwich. He's going nowhere. Right. Now, sometimes if you big hook them and all these other things, that happens. But if you're burying the hooks, you got him before he got you. And I the guys that do it, you know exactly what I'm saying. You've set the hook before he's finished hitting you. That's where you want to be, where it's instantaneous. Contact hit. This comes back to, and again, where we're saying everything's interrelated. If you can't feel the bottom with a crankbait, right? Tick, click, tick, click with rocks, or I'm touching soft bottom, hard bottom. You're not in tune enough with your equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
So when a fish grabs a thing, there's a, what was that? There's a delay, right? There's a tactile delay. Ooh, that's a fish. Now I'm setting the hook. Opposed to touch, boom, right? Instantaneous, something different happened. I'm setting the hook on it, right? That is the one corollary I see between a lot of guys that are professional muscle gamers, guys that are known in the sport, is like instantaneous. Booker's the same way. You don't see a fish bend his rod. You see Booker bend the rod, right? It's not hit, set. It is something different. I'm setting on that. The fish might still be turning, but I'll tell you, that's a way to hook them. You know, so when you feel something different, I tell my clients all the time, it might feel like a crappie strike set on it. And one of my favorite hillbillyisms ever is hook sets are free. And that's a fact. The hook sets are free all day long. You don't got to pay for them. Set the hook. You know, that's a big thing. Power, yeah. And thinking about it, and I'm crawling down the rabbit hole here because it is, like, I'm glad Frost brought that up because it is such a big topic. when it comes to setting the hook, commit. Commit, 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 commit. Right? Don't set the hook with 20-inch intensity hoping for a 50. Set the damn hook. Set it. No holds barred. You're fishing for the meanest critter in the water. Hit him. Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, when I, buddy, when I get snagged, it's a doozy. Every time. I can't tell me how many stumps I have bumped with a glide bait. I feel it hit it. Like the nose of the glide bait hits it. There's something different. I've just buried a 5-aught past the barb. I'm beating it out of a stump with my retriever rod, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Commit. Also, too, this is a mechanics thing. We're talking about the mechanical nature of a figure eight, right? What does your hook set look like? Not many people know. Right? It is an imperative part of your game that it is good and is to the side and up. If you watch, again, I keep talking about Joe, but Joe's mechanics are so good, how can you not talk about it?
Yeah.
Joe sets to the side and then lifts the rod tip, right? I fish left-handed. If you watch me, that rod comes across my chest, parallel, and then up in one foul swoop. Up. I've watched.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've slow-moed myself. Sometimes I screw it up, but that is what I'm going for, is to the side and up quickly. What does your hook set look like? Do you even know? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
All of us have a smartphone. If you can afford to musky fish, you have a smartphone. Take some practice casting. Go, am I setting the hook like a bass angler? If you're setting the hook like a bass angler, you got problems, because the composition of a muskie's mouth is just a few millimeters of skin over a bone mandible in the front, right? We're all trying to land that hook in the side, in the corner.
Yeah. Slide the bait. Yeah. Into the sweet spot. Hard matter there.
It is so difficult. I've done it. We've probably, everybody's done it at some point where you put it through their snoot, right? Through the end of the mouth. Man, you have to jimmy jack them to do that. Like you have to Hawkamania 87 to put it through that. But if your mechanics are poor, and your hook sets this straight up trout bass set hook set, you're going to beak hook them all. Especially on bucktails. Right? There's a video. Tyler lost a monster on Lake of the Woods. Vertical hook set. Nothing to the side. Beak hooked fish. Right? I mean, it is what it is. The other thing I can say is this is, I had a fish one time. I watched it. It was 10 feet out from the eight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so close, and I was watching the fish, and I was like freaked out. And I watched it put its mouth around the bucktail, but I didn't feel it, right?
Yeah. Kind of like a surface bait. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It was weird. I just stopped for a second. Stop. And then I sat, and I had that thing in the bottom of the mouth. It was madder than hell.
Mm-hmm.
But that bait fell inside of its mouth. And then I thwapped the crap out of it, right? Because it was in that weird, like, and it, again, all rules are off when you're in that weird, like, mid-range, right? Tyler almost blinded me this past summer with a shallow invader right there, which was, he had a fish hit after dark, and I got the backside of the bait upside the head because it wasn't in the figure eight. It was still in the hook set zone, but it's in that danger zone right there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, oof.
You know, which is a whole other conversation, but hook set, hook set, hook set, thinking about what you're doing, understanding what you're doing, understanding that a straight up and down vertical bass hook set is not the appropriate hook set for musky fishing. If you're doing that hook set, you're doing it wrong, in my opinion, whether I'm wrong or I'm right. In my book, you need to be setting to the side and then up and lifting. The way to correct that is self-introspection. The way you can get self-introspection is film yourself doing it. How do I set the hook? In your head, you're setting it perfectly like a pro every time. Agreed? I think I am.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I still screw up all the time. You'll see videos this coming year of me going, you know, I watch back, I go, that sucked. How did I get that fish? Because it's not, you know, I'm not mechanically perfect every time. I wish I was. We all wish we were. I'm still striving for that mechanical perfection. Because I genuinely believe that good mechanics equal muskies in the net. It's the same, Jay, if you want to look at it in the matter of, and there's two things I'm just pontificating here, right? You love your Green Bay Packers. Who doesn't?
Yeah, right.
It's just like Aaron Rodgers could use a pretty good route runner on occasion. You know what I'm saying? You get that guy's like if you can get that, like he knows that this guy's going to run that route every time and he's going to dime him. He doesn't have to look or see him. He knows he's there.
Yeah, right.
We're all looking for the Hail Mary fourth quarter, 2 seconds left, 50-inch touchdown. We've thrown it 75 yards. Those don't happen very often. Good mechanic, good route running, good drives. I often say this, and I'll shut up here in a second, that muskie fishing, and I hate golf. Golf is awful, right? The clothes are awful. The only person in golf I can relate to is John Daly because he's a drunk. But with that being said,
Steve Stricker.
There you go.
He's about my age. He's a big musky fisherman.
Well, you know, there's some golfers out there that aren't too horrible, I guess.
Oh, yeah. He's a cool dude.
But with that being said, is if you look at golf, there's a long game and a short game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a lot of guys at the driving range that can hit the ball 250 yards. There's not a lot of guys that are like PGA level putters. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there's not a lot of what are you talking about?
There are a lot of guys that focus on they can hit the ball. They can go down to the driving range and whack the crap out of a ball and hit 250, 300 yards, right?
Well, here's a great example. Here's a Steve Stricker story for you, mm-hmm. right? Steve was in the, you know, PGA for years and years, and he's over 50 now, so I think he's doing senior tour and whatever.
Uh-huh.
But like, this is like 10, 15 years ago. His buddy Tiger calls him. This is Tiger Woods.
Right.
And he said, Steve, can I have a putting? This is true. It really happened.
Yeah.
He asked him for a putting lesson.
Right.
Putting. Tiger Woods. This is before he had all that trouble and he had that, you know, that long decline that he went through.
Right.
Yeah, this is when he was still kind of at the top of his game. Steve's like, sure, dude, you know,
spent the afternoon or
a couple days. And he's just like, Steve was always known as a mechanically very sound putter.
Uh-huh.
It's part of the game.
Well, that's
I thought that was a neat story, but anyway.
No, I mean, but that's the thing is that's where you win the game.
Right.
That's why I'm barking about figure eights. That's why you win the game. Good mechanics, right? We all wish, and I'm not one of them, we all wish, I was talking about Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers is a freak. Can make a play up out of nowhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You think in different, Wayne Gretzky, right?
The great one.
The great one. I'm a hockey freak. But Wayne Gretzky leads the league in scoring, but if you take Wayne Gretzky assists only, leads the league in scoring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Freak.
Yeah.
You know, we're not freaks. There's very few musky fishing freaks that could just walk out there and be great because they are. You know what I'm saying? The rest of us need to focus on the mechanics. The
rest of us need to work at it. Some people they've got a gift or whatever.
Right. Yeah, you're not, I need practice on my layups. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and that's why I'm talking about this because it's just that introspective nature. I mean, where am I weak? You know, we had all like to think we are the great one, but we're not. You know, you go, what do I need to improve on? What I need to work on? Jay, do you have anything else to add to this just ridiculous rant we're going on here?
Not really, to be honest with you. We covered a lot of that basic stuff in depth, I might add.
In depth, folks, in depth. Anyway, we got a few time for just
when
a few
you
questions
confronted
here.
Eye to eye,
eye to
with
eye.
A legend.
Listen, the first person that challenges Elmer to a stare down, I will steal something from inside the Muskie shop and give it to
you. Yeah, I'll do the same thing. It's going to be classic.
It'll be classic. We got time for a few questions here, guys. If I didn't get your questions this week, I'll get them next week. Kyle.
Q&A.
This is why I should screen the questions. Kyle, will Tyler Andrews and the Bottom Raiders be performing at the Muskie Shop Bash?
I was just thinking about that. I was thinking about Guru. It's just like, I'm not sure if he can make it. I hope so.
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to have any live music there. I would hope so. But more on that later. We'll work on that. Richie.
We'll work on it. Yeah.
Richie says, you guys have been mentioning some Livings and stuff, and I've been seeing a lot about the bait brand. What do you guys like as far as their bait lineup? He said, I have the cash right now for two new lures, and I'm thinking about buying some Livingston stuff. Talk to me about what Livingston Muskie lures I need. Well, I'm going to pull up a website real quick. Let's see. It's called www.muskieshop. Is that with two P's and an E or no?
Shut up, Steve.
Muskieshop.com.
You know, I know which ones you like. You like those Headhunters, right? Am I right?
I got them pulled up. I like the Livingston Lures Headhunter. And you have one. It is in Gold Scale Metallic, right? That is my
cool
favorite.
Pattern. Yeah.
That's my favorite.
You can't beat gold. Yeah,
no.
All-purpose.
All-purpose, stained, clear. I have one of those that is just beat to death. I love it. It's a great... What I like about that bait, it's like you can... surge it, you can reel it, stop, you can straight retrieve it. It's got a really good action. You don't have to kill yourself to work that bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
They make
mm-hmm.
a 6.5 and they make an 8-inch. I like the 6.5 because when I'm throwing that bait, I don't have a lot of great ideas.
How does the paint job hold up? You said beat to death. How would you rate it as in terms of durability?
Oh, it's good. The paint job's fine. It's just like it's got a lot of hours on it. It's like it's still holding up. I mean, we're talking
cool.
20, 30 fish under its belt, you know.
Very cool.
So it's not like it's dog.
They got a surface bait that is just absolutely BA. It's the Walking Boss Magnum, the one with the jitterbug kind of lip.
That's an interesting bait.
You should
bait,
see
yeah.
that thing in the water. That is cool.
That's a cool bait for sure. But I was going to say this. If I was going to buy two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the Jerkmaster.
Yeah, everyone's raving about that. That's their new one.
Yeah.
That's like a 8-inch, kind of a shallow diving
mm-hmm.
with it.
Big
it's got that
bait.
EBS system inside yeah. it. Yeah.
And that's the thing. I'll say this about the EBS. It can't hurt. All your baits make a ton of noise.
Can't hurt.
And it's not turning fish off. It is not a deterrent by any means. Yeah,
no, it's subtle.
It's subtle. Especially on the pulse, but you said like the Walking Boss, that is a way interesting. If you're fishing pressured water, that's like tannic in their top water kind of fish, I would be thinking about that Walking Boss, but definitely the Headhunter, definitely the Jerkmaster. Those are super cool baits there. Next up, mm-hmm. Alex, what are your tips for fishing Boone Bondi baits? Oh my goodness. And that reminds me, I got to tell the story.
Oh, yeah, the hit, yeah.
That's silly. I was out with clients. We had mm-hmm. a pretty good trip. And then, guys, I'll tell you, I'm jigging a Bondi bait. My arm was killing me, so I was like, okay, I got to jig for a little bit. I at least got a bait wet. I got the crap rocked out of me by a flathead catfish. It was.
That's what you thought it was.
Unbelievable. Narrowly took my freaking ass off the boat. There's no way it was a muskie. It went upstream. It was ridiculous. Hopefully we'll put the clip up. I end up taking a knee. It hit so fast and so hard, I was flipped around the seat and on my knees within like half a second. It's ridiculous. So make sure you're not fishing where there's any catfish or sturgeon would be my first Bondi bait tip. First Bondi bait tip, however, if you've not fished before, get a jig ripper. Muskie Shop sells them that attachment. that's such a way to like alleviate any arm strain. You can get really lazy with it.
Well, you can use a screwdriver. You can put it, have it assembled in 60 seconds on any rod, and if you don't like it, take it off. But yeah, it alleviates a lot of that arm and shoulder problems, and you get more powerful hook sets that way.
That is a tip. And the other tip with a Bondi bait for me is this: up the hooks.
What the hooks?
Up scale the hooks.
Go up one size?
Yeah.
Okay.
I run fives on mine. I'm not saying they're underhooked. It's just, I see a way better hookup potential on those baits, because if they hit it down, we're talking about a mouthful of rubber.
Yeah.
If they hit that thing on the fall, a lot of times there's a lot of rubber before he feels steel.
No doubt.
And so that's a trick there. One thing I'll say is this, Alex, is if you're working a Bondi, don't overwork it. Don't bounce that thing 9 feet up and down. It is a subtle bait. You know, I'm lifting the rod 9 inches. I'm lifting the rod 12 inches. Don't. I've seen guys doing it. You put them on a Bondi bait and they're lifting the rod 7 feet. You know,
getting that thing. It's slow. It's wobbling too hard.
Those would be some quick tips. I'm trying to get some questions here. All right. Let's go here real quick. Gary, looking for the best musky reel that's bang for the buck. My budget's about $400 max. What are your guys' thoughts on the super reels that are available today? Let me flip over here. We already got the site open, man. It's just like,
there's so many good, there really is so many good ones right now.
Yeah.
We're in a different era in terms of quality of reels. I mean, there's a lot of people that swear by Tranks 400s.
Yeah.
I know we got you one of those Daiwa Lexa Wins.
Mm-hmm. Oh, clients love that.
Does it have the wind grip on it?
Yeah. That's a really nice.
Those are solid.
It's solid. I mean, I'm looking here. There's not a bad reel. There just isn't. I'll say this. If money is no object, right? You know, if money is no object and you want a super reel, go with the Tranks, just because that is sort of like what everybody's doing, right? Can't go wrong. Not a bad reel. I would not get the 500. 400 is right there in the sweet spot as far as size, unless you're 7'9" or something.
Yeah, you can get plenty of line on that to operate it. The 500 is a heavy reel.
That's a big reel. With that being said, though, man, that Toro Beast is a nice reel.
Yeah.
Those are good reels. I mean, we do not have a lot of crap reels. Jay had talked about, and I'll pull it up real quick, which is the Daiwa Lexa Win. Everybody that's had that reel in their hands on the boat is like, this is so smooth. You know, it's $199 and it's a super smooth. If you're one of those guys like your reel has to feel buttery in your hands, that's a great grip on there. Really good quality reel. Again, I always like weird stuff. The Akuma stuff is cool to me.
Yeah. Price range.
Yep. And I throw as you guys know, I'm a lefty. And if you're a lefty like I am, the Akuma stuff is killer. The Boo stuff and the Akuma stuff, I think, are the best left-handed reels. Because I think a lot of times when these guys make left-handed reels, they're like, okay, reverse everything and be done with it. And it seems like, as the odd man out, I've noticed like some of these other brands break down faster. Like, I'll have client reels that are getting dogged out every day, but my reel's getting dogged out and not hard. You know what I'm saying? It's breaking down a bunch. The Akuma stuff is rock solid for a lefty. And I like the price point, but the Komodo is a pretty dang good size reel. I think it's a 400 size reel.
Yeah, most people go with 400s. That's a little bit bigger frame.
You know, and so those are treated me well. But again, I love the freaking Max Toros.
Yeah, $150.
$150. They break through them in the trash. Yep. It's a great reel. It's quality. It's easy to work on. You know, it's not overly complicated if you can work on your own stuff. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say I dislike any reels where like there's nothing that the shop sells that are bad. It's just a matter of personal preference. But, you know, right now the Shimano Tranks is king. That is the musky reel, right? That's what everybody's throwing. If you're just going for bang for your buck, get that of the Lexa Win. let me look here just to make sure I'm not talking out of school. The Citrix is a little bit smaller of a reel, right, Jay?
Yeah, that's kind of a Bass series. Those are
beefier.
Akumas.
Yeah, you know.
Go with the Komodo.
Get the Komodo if you're going to do that. Mm-hmm. But come on, I mean, you can't go wrong with the Tranks. There's a billion of them. There's parts out there like crazy. That would be the winner. Let's do this. We'll have time for one more here.
Okay.
Okay, this is just funny. But Jake says he's driving 19 hours to the Muskie Shop Bash. Sorry, I was reading that. I'll read that. Yeah, this guy's driving 19 hours to the Muskie Shop Bash. We commend you.
Wow.
Okay.
Awesome.
Max says, what are your tips for casting Magnum crankbaits? Okay, casting. So we're talking
he's talking heavy crankbaits.
Yeah, big shallow raiders, you know, casting Jakes. Heck, we're talking Livingston, man. The big head hunters of Magnum, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Being set up for it, man. And make sure you're throwing the heavy rod. Make sure you've got it. When I'm talking
long rod and sweep it out there. Don't jerk it out there.
Sweep it. And the thing I can say is this, and a quick tip before we shut her down here, is having the right reel, because with those Magnum crankbaits, you got to have a quicker reel. If you want to get that thing down and it's actually working, have a 6-3-1. Right.
Or a big spooled reel.
Or a big spool reel, man.
Yeah, just something with, 30 plus inches of retrieve per crank. Right. Suitable.
So make sure you got the setup. And the thing is this, work them with some power. If you're fishing big baits and you're fishing power baits like that, you're fishing these big Magnum crankbaits, fish with intensity, right? When it lands next to the reef or it lands next to the weed bed, rip the crap out of it. It's going to take more power to get it down, right? Mm-hmm. And doing its thing. So fish it with some gusto, right? You don't have to overwork and act like a crazy person, but don't mamby-pamby those baits. At that point, we're not finessing, right? We're not finessing the fish up with 8-10-inch crankbaits.
Yeah, there's more mass to move more mass. Something that big and heavy. Yeah.
Right, and you're trying to get attention. Act like it. I'll see guys put on Magnum crankbaits and straight retrieve them, and they're running an inch and a half below the water, and you go, not doing much for me here. Right? Work with intensity. Work with, hard smacking on the rod, long rips, long pulls, picking up that slack. So, allow the bait to have some turn off and some twitch off with some slack line, but picking that slack up to get that thing back down there, banging it in, making contact with cover and structure. That would be the first things I would go for. But anyway, well, Jay, we have, again, ran our mouths forever. And that is another Muskie 360 podcast. Folks, we will talk to you next week. Later, Jay.
Later.